Ashlisya va padratam panashtu mama darshanam maramahatam karotu va yatadada davidadatu lampato mat purananatastu se eva napura. All this tapasya. But Vishnu was not showing himself. And here's a chance to live with the wealthiest man on earth. Hare Krishna. Most powerful conqueror of the earth. King of kings. She said, get out from here. I have given my heart to Lord Vishnu. And I can accept no one else. Oh, and Ravana heard the name Vishnu. That really excited his anger. Now, what is this Vishnu? What is he doing for you? You're worshiping him for all this time and he's just leaving you alone with no companion in this jungle with nothing to eat. What is he doing for you? Come with me. I will give you the robes and the jewels of a queen. I will give you pleasures that even the most elevated damsels of the heavens cannot dream of. You come with me. She chastised him that I have given my heart to Lord Vishnu. Get out from here. So Ravana went to take her by force. He grabbed her by the hair. And Vedavati, by her mystic power, she took her hand and just cut that hair right off. And Ravana fell back. Then Vedavati invoked the presence of Agni Dev in the form of fire. And then she spoke her final words to Ravana. Because you have touched my body is forever impure. And therefore I must end it today. But I will take birth again. And in my next birth, I will be the cause of your destruction and the extermination of your entire dynasty. And then her body was engulfed with flames. Sometime later, Suparnaka, the sister of Ravana, informed her brother about the beauty of Sita. And just by hearing the description of Sita's qualities, Ravana's heart was burning with desire. He induced Maricha to take the form of a magnificent deer and allure Ram and Lakshman away. At that time, Ravana came to kidnap the consort of Sri Ram. But it is not possible for a demon like Ravana to touch Sita Devi. Agni Dev appeared and he replaced the original Sita with Vedavati. Vedavati looked identical to Sita. The Kurma Purana calls her the Maya Sita. The false Sita. She's actually an expansion of the goddess of fortune. But not the original Sita. So it was Ravana, he thought he stole Sita, but in truth, he stole Vedavati. And it was this Vedavati. After thousands of years of tapasya, she still never even saw Ram. She came to the world and was immediately kidnapped by Ravana. And she was screaming in the air And she threw some jewels down to the monkeys, Sugriva and Hanuman, when she was flying over Kishkindakshetra. And ultimately, she was a prisoner of Sri Lanka. Captive in the Ashoka groves of Ravana, where every day she was tormented. She was emotionally tortured. She was threatened in so many ways. Ravana was coming with the finest perfumes, the most elegant gowns, with by his mystic powers making himself the most handsome among men. Well-groomed hair with scented oils, promising her jewels and gift and pleasures, everything, just become my consort. And she refused. And he would threaten her and scream at her and roar at her. And other rakshasas were tormenting her. And rakshashis, ugly rakshashis, horrible demoniac beings were surrounding her practically day and night, trying to just emotionally break her down to submission. And this went on for about 10 months. Vedavati performed all this tapasya, and this is all she was getting. She did it all as a service to Sita Devi. Ravana would curse her. Ravana would threaten her. If you do not submit to me, I will chop your body in fine pieces, and I will drink your blood and eat your flesh as my morning meal. These are your two alternatives. Either live as the primary queen of all the universe, as my queen, or die a miserable death and be eaten by me. Those were the two choices he gave. But Vedavati, so chaste, so absolutely pure, not even for one second ever deviated her mind from the loving remembrance of Sri Ramchandra. Lord Ram and Lakshman crossed over the bridge to Sri Lanka with the soldiers of Sugriva of the Vanara race. There was a great war. Ultimately, Vedavati's curse was fulfilled. All the sons, all the relatives, all the soldiers of Ravana were destroyed, and ultimately Ravana fell to the ground dead. The Rakshasa race was exterminated of Ravana. Sita was brought back to Rameshwaram, where we will be going in a few days. It was Vedavati. And after all this time, first time Vedavati's actually seeing Sri Ram. And he rejects her. He says that, how do I know you are perfectly chaste and pure? Living with such a great person as Ravana for 10 months, if even for one tenth of a second your mind went astray from thinking of me, then you are not pure, you are not chaste, and I cannot have you. So you should be tested by fire. He ordered Lakshman to get big logs of trees, and started on fire. It was a blazing fire. And Vedavati, in the role of Sita, She had absolute confidence of her chastity and her purity. She walked right into the fire. It was at that time, according to Kurma Purana, that Agni Dev appeared with the original Sita, whom he had taken away and put in the care of Parvati for all of this time. And Agni Dev explained to Sri Ram, this is the original Sita, and this is Vedavati, the Maya Sita who was taken by Ravana. Lord Sri Ramchandra accepted the real Sita as his wife. And Sita told Ram that Vedavati has performed such devotional service, such sacrifice under the torments of the prisonership of Ravana for all this time. She did it all for me and you. Please accept her as your wife. This is her only ambition, her only ideal. And Lord Ram said that in this incarnation, I have taken a vow of only one wife. So I cannot accept her in this incarnation. However, in a future incarnation, I will fulfill her desire and marry her. And Ram left with Sita. Vedavati still was alone, with her mind fixed on the promise of the Lord. That was in Treta Yuga. The whole Dwapara Yuga passed. Krishna's Leela was manifested on this world, and then it went to another universe. Vedavati was waiting a long time through Treta Yuga, through Dwapara Yuga, and in Kali Yuga, she appeared. And it's a wonderful story how she appeared. In the dynasty of the moon, there was a great king of the Chola. The Chola family of the name Sudharma. Sudharma had two sons, Aksharaj and Tondaman. He raised them, and they were loving brothers. When they were of age to take the responsibility of the kingdom, Sudharma accepted Vanaprast. He wanted to divide his kingdom in half before he left and give each of his two sons, who were both worthy of being kings, half of his kingdom. But the two brothers, they had such deep love for each other, neither of them wanted half the kingdom. We will both rule the same kingdom together. We don't want to be separated. So that was the arrangement. Sudharma went to the forest, never to return. Aksharaj and Tondaman together ruled the kingdom as two kings, one kingdom. Amazing example of brotherhood. They weren't suing each other in courts. They were working together with total love and respect. Aksharaj, who was the elder of the two, all of his desires were fulfilled in the way he was ruling his citizens, except one. He had no child. He longed for a child. He approached the Brahmins, and they told him, you should perform a yajna for the purpose of having a child. So as part of the process of the yajna, the king had to plow several times around the yajnashala. So as he was plowing around and around and around, his plow got caught in something in the ground. And he pulled it, and out from the ground came an effulgent golden box. On its own, the box opened, revealing an exquisite golden lotus flower. In the whorl of the lotus flower was an effulgent little baby girl, smiling and glancing mercifully upon everyone. Aksharaj picked up the little child and showed her to the Brahmins. And the Brahmins were amazed. They said, just as Janak Maharaj was plowing the fields around the yajna, and from the earth came Mahalakshmi, the goddess of fortune Sita. In the same way, the goddess of fortune has come again. And because she has been found on a lotus flower, her name will be Padmavati. This Padmavati was Vedavati, who had taken birth again in this world. Aksharaj brought little Padmavati to his wife, Dharani Devi, and they raised her with great, great affection. When she came of marriageable age, it created a big problem in the house. Who possibly is qualified to marry Padmavati? So many people were coming and offering their proposals, but Aksharaj did not see that anyone was qualified. One day, Narada Muni took the form of a Brahmin. And while Padmavati was sitting in a garden, he said, let me see your palms. He showed her palms. He saw beautiful lotus flowers in both palms. Narada Muni was ecstatic. Tears flowed from his eyes. I understand who you are. You don't know, but I know you are the goddess of fortune who is incarnated on this earth. And Lord Vishnu will soon be your husband. Padmavati, she forgot what he said. So many Brahmins say so many things in this world. Srinivas told Vakula Devi that this girl Padmavati is none other than my consort Vedavati, who has been performing tapasya for several yugas to gain me as her husband. Vakula said, I will go to negotiate the marriage. Vakula Malika went to a place called Kapileshwar, a temple of Lord Shiva. There she found the maid servants of Padmavati offering very fervent prayers. She asked, they told that ever since our princess Padmavati left that garden where she met a strange hunter, she has fallen. Ready? She has fallen deathly sick. She has high fever. And Aksharaj and Dharani Devi, her mother and father, They have brought the best doctors, every type of doctor, but nothing seems to work. She's dying, and nobody can understand the cause or the cure. So we have come here to pray to Kapileshwar to please give mercy and save her. Vakula Devi said, that is why I have come too. Please bring me to her mother and father. They said, yes, we will bring. You will give them hope. Meanwhile, Srinivas, it was his desire to elaborate this pastime. He took the form of a gypsy woman and had a mystical gypsy stick to put spells on people. And a little baby. And she was dressed just like a gypsy. Very authentic. And she came into Narayanpuram, the capital of King Aksharaj. And she was calling out that I am a gypsy woman and I have great powers. I could cure the sick and I could read the future. So one of the maidservants of the queen, she ran and told Dharani Devi, Padmavati's mother, that there's a gypsy woman. Can I bring her? She seems to know the future. Said, yes, bring her immediately. So Srinivas came in. Said, please tell, what is the problem with my daughter? What is the future? What will happen to my daughter? Please tell me, O gypsy woman. He said, I will tell. I will access the goddess of the mountain to speak through me. But first, you must bring me rice, kumkum, turmeric, silk saris, and gold coins. And she set it all up very nicely and started chanting mantras. Said, now you must bring your daughter to me. Padmavati was brought in. Srinivas was very happy. The queen saw this gypsy woman gazing very deeply upon her daughter. Said, show me your palms. Said, I know what is her illness. She met a very great personality. She has fallen in love with him. And due to separation, she is lovesick. The queen was insulted by this. What nonsense you're talking, my daughter, lovesick. Said, yes. This is what happened, I know. I could see it. I could see the past and I could see the future. In fact, this person is none other than the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord who is living in the mountains of Seshachala. And he was hunting an elephant and he happened to see your daughter. And all her friends, when they saw this elephant coming, they all ran away and left your daughter alone. But this person was heroic. He came to rescue her. How do I know all these things? The goddess of the mountain is telling me. The queen rejected what the gypsy woman said. But she said, the mother of this great personality is coming very soon to negotiate marriage. And you should accept it. Then the gypsy woman left. And Srinivas went back to his anthill. At the next moment, Vakula Devi arrived through another door. But Vakula Devi, her stature was awesome. She had such majestic good qualities. Although she just lived as a very simple woman with no possessions in the forest, she had such dignity that Dharani Devi immediately was very deeply impressed and gave her a respectable greeting. Bakula Devi offered her a plate made out of ivory that was covered with the most precious celestial jewels and presented it to the queen. Said, I have come to ask your daughter's hand for the marriage of my son, who is the Supreme Lord, living in the hills of the of Sheshachalam. The queen said, what is this incarnation of God? I have not heard of any incarnation of Vishnu. And if Vishnu, who is full of all opulences, were to incarnate in this world, what would he be doing living like a hermit in the jungles of the mountains? Let me speak to my king about this. Dharani Devi repeated the proposal to Aksharaj. Aksharaj consulted his ministers, who were Brahmins. Said, we don't know of any incarnation of God on these hills. But the great sage, Shuka, he's living in those mountains. He is all-knowing. We should consult him. They all went to the hermitage of Shuka. And Shuka said, yes, the supreme personality of Godhead, Narayan, is living in the hills of Sheshachalam. And King Aksharad, you can never estimate your supreme good fortune that he wants to marry your daughter. Why does he want to marry your daughter? She is a goddess of fortune, his eternal consort. You should immediately, as soon as possible, arrange for this marriage. Aksharad, Shuka, and the other family members came together and selected the soonest auspicious date, which was on the next Ekadashi. And they wrote, Aksharaj wrote a letter to Srinivas, proclaiming that he is offering the hand of his daughter in marriage. So Vakula Devi and the sage Shuka delivered that letter to the anthill where Srinivas was residing. Should I continue the story? Just tell me when to stop if you like. Srinivas was very happy. Very happy. But the marriage was very soon. It was just a matter of days. And he wanted to invite all the demigods. So he meditated in his mind, and from his mind, Garuda and Anantadev appeared. And he gave them the order, invite all the principal demigods to come at once to my marriage. And soon they were coming, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Vayu, Agni, Surya, Yamaraj. Very auspicious, everyone was coming. And when Srinivas saw the large crowds of very, very highly respectable people, he became unhappy. Brahma asked, what is the problem? All arrangements are being made. Why are you unhappy? He said, how are we going to feed all these people? I'm living in an anthill. I don't have anything. And we have to make this should be a glorious marriage. It should be an elegant marriage. We need to arrange all the decorations. And not only that, we have to feed everyone feasts of sumptuous prasad, but I have nothing. So Brahma, he called for Kuvera. And Kuvera stood before Lord Srinivas with folded palms, offering his repeated dandavats, and said, my lord, whatever I have is your property. You are the proprietor of everything that exists.
The entire treasury of all the gods is ultimately yours. Just tell me and we will utilize it all. Lord Srinivas said, no. It is yours. I will not take anything from you, but I will accept a loan. Kuvera wanted to give everything, but the Lord insisted, no, it must be a loan. I must set the principle. I guess it's a principle that for many marriages you need loans. But also the dignity of this avatar. He did not want to take his devotee's property. And then the Lord dictated the terms of the loan. He said, you give me 14 lakhs of gold coins with interest. And until the end of the Kali Yuga, whoever is really my devotee, when they come to see me to take darshan, they will give their valuables and their wealth to pay the interest of the loan that I owe to you for my marriage. It is because of this ingenious contract that the Balaji Tirupati temple is the wealthiest temple in all the world. I've seen people put their wedding rings in the hundi. Hare Krishna. People give so much valuables. But it is the duty of the devotees of Srinivas to keep the Lord's word. And he said, until the end of Kali Yuga, whoever my devotee is, when they come for my darshan, they will give substantial wealth to pay the interest. And then at the end of Kali Yuga, then I will give back the principal as well. So this arrangement was made. And all the very, very opulent arrangements of marriage were taking place. But Srinivas again was looking sad. And he was asked why. Padmavati could understand. Everyone could understand. Padmavati was not there at the time, I'm sorry. The demigods could understand. It was because Lakshmi Devi was still all alone in Kolhapur performing tapasya. He did not want to marry Padmavati without the presence of Lakshmi Devi. So Srinivas called for Surya and told Surya, go to Lakshmi Devi and tell her that I'm sick, very sick, and she should come at once and then she will come. Surya was very afraid, but you're not sick. You're not sick. How could I tell Lakshmi Devi a lie? What will happen to me if I tell my Supreme Mother a lie? She will know. She knows everything. And Srinivas says, no, I will cover her by my Maya potency so she will believe you. So Surya went to Kolhapur and told Lakshmi Devi that Srinivas is living in the Venkatachala, the hills that cure all sins, and he's very sick, and he's asking for you to be by his side. So Lakshmi Devi said, I will go immediately. When she arrived, Srinivas fell to the ground pretending he was sick. And her heart became very soft. But then she saw so many guests in all directions. She was wondering, what's happening? Why all these guests? And then the Lord opened the curtain of Maya, Yoga Maya, so that Lakshmi could understand everything. She looked at her beloved Lord, Narayan, in the form of Srinivas. and said, I know what's happening. You are fulfilling your vow at last to marry Vedavati, who has appeared in this world as Padmavati. The Lord said, yes. Lakshmi said, I am thrilled with joy that you will do this. It is my great happiness. In fact, I will personally perform the bathing ceremony to consecrate you for your marriage. Everyone was joyful. Lakshmi Devi consecrated the Lord with the holy bath. And then the Lord descended the mountain to Narayanpuram, where Aksharaj was waiting with great opulence. And this marriage ceremony lasted for several weeks with great festivities and joy. In the end, Bakula Devi told Aksharaj, now my son must return to his home. So Padmavati and Srinivas left the royal kingdom of Narayanpuram and went back up to the top of mountain, Tirumala, where they decided to reside in the ashram of Agastya Muni. In this way, they lived happily together. Some time passed. Padmavati noticed that there was a sadness in the heart of her beloved. She said, I know why you are sad. You are feeling separation from Lakshmi. Bring her back. Lord Srinivas said, but will she come back? She is still performing tapasya because of Bhrigu Muni's kick on my chest. Will she come back? I said, of course she will come back. But what about you? Padmavati said, it will be the greatest honor and joy of my life to share my home with Lakshmi. Together we will serve you for all of eternity. So Lord Srinivas went to Kolhapur to bring Lakshmi back. But Mahalakshmi, knowing he was coming, she disappeared, went to Patala Loka, where she took shelter in the ashram of Kapiladev, the avatar of the Lord. The Lord could not find her. It was at that time that the Lord was told that he should perform tapasya to get Lakshmi back. On these Tirumala hills, he was to dig with his own hands a kund. He dug the kund, and then he had Varuna fill it with ambrosial waters of sacred rivers. And then he was to install a magnificent golden lotus flower. And he was to sit in the world of that lotus flower and meditate on Lakshmi Devi. He sat in that lotus flower. The power of his meditation, the power of his love in separation, created a heat that was filling the entire universe. And ultimately it reached the heart of Lakshmi. And she consulted Kapila Muni, what should I do? Kapila Muni told her that your Lord, your beloved, he is feeling deep separation from you. He is performing tapasya to get you back. You should go to him. It is your heartfelt desire. Why are you taking so seriously this offense of Bhrigu Muni? After all, it was the Lord's plan. Even if Bhrigu Muni committed an offense by kicking him in the chest, what is the result? Now the whole world knows without exception of doubt that Lord Narayan is the supreme personality of Godhead, the king of all kings and the greatest object of everyone's worship. Bhrigu Muni, he has established that fact beyond doubt. So even if he committed some offense, the end justifies the means. He did a great thing. You should go back. You should forgive Bhrigu Muni. And you should give pleasure to Lord Srinivas. That was just what Lakshmi Devi wanted to hear. With a blissful heart, she traveled through the stem of that lotus flower. And in a most miraculous, astounding way, through the lotus stem, she just appeared on the whirl of the golden lotus at the side of Srinivas, effulgent like millions of suns. Srinivas and Lakshmi Dev gazed upon each other. They were united again. Sri Venkateshwara Dev Ki. Should I continue? Bhrigu Muni came to that lotus flower, as did the devatas and the rishis and the sages and the devotees. Bhrigu Muni was just offering full obeisances again and again and again with tears of repentance in his eyes, and begged forgiveness from Lakshmi Devi for what he had done. And Lakshmi smiled. She said, "You are forgiven. You have done nothing wrong. This was all the Leela of my beloved Lord, and you were just an instrument of this Leela." On the Tirumala Mountain, Lord Srinivas lived with Bakula, Lakshmi, and Padmavati for many years. The king Aksharaj meditating on Srinivas left this world. At that time, difficulty came upon the kingdom. After Aksharaj had departed, his son, Basudan, he considered that he was the rightful king. But there was a problem, because Aksharaj shared the kingdom with his brother Tondaman for all those years. Tondaman said that it was our agreement. Originally, Sudharma, our father, wanted to divide the kingdom in half for both of us, but due to our love for one another, we wanted to rule together. So we have been doing this. So now I should rule with you. But Basudan said, "Is it in writing? Where is it in writing? How can you prove it?" Wasn't in writing. So Basudan declared that his uncle was lying and that he would be the sole king. So there was a disagreement. The disagreement escalated. Different people of the kingdom were taking either person's side. And soon it came to the point where it was going to be a fratricidal war. On the battle, there was Tondaman's army and Basudan, the son of Aksharaj's army. How sad. This is the age of Kali. If you don't put things in writing, nobody knows what is truth. And we see this happening even amongst devotees today. People make agreements, people make policies, and then as the years go by, different people have different versions of what was agreed on. And then there's fighting and battles, and brothers become enemies, and God brothers become hateful, and everything is finished. Srila Prabhupada warned us, it happened even in Gaudiya Math. Prabhupada said when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was present, it was a most powerful united preaching team. Nothing could stop it. It had the capacity of just spreading Krishna consciousness, pure love of God, throughout the world. But after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur departed, and even just before he departed, there was conflict over who would get different properties, over who would get different positions, over who would get different facilities. And after he left, there was battles in the courts, and even battles with fists. And everyone believed they were right. It was just different interpretations and miscommunication. And the Gaudiya Math was splintered into dozens of different branches. And Srila Prabhupada tried in every possible way to unite his God brothers again. And when he saw it was not possible, he took the mission of his Guru Maharaj to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world himself at the age of 70 with nothing. And he did it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So yes, here is a loving uncle and a loving son fighting over property and position. So they both wanted Srinivas on their side. So Srinivas went to Padmavati, said, whose side should I be on? She said, she was so sad about this war. So sad. But she said, still, Vasudhan is my brother. He's closest to me. You cannot go against him. So Srinivas gave his conch shell and his Sudarshan chakra to Tondaman. And he said he would be on the side of Vasudhan. So the fight was raging. But there was a problem. Tondaman saw that because Srinivas was on the other side, none of his soldiers would fight enthusiastically because they all loved him. How can you fight against the ultimate object of your love? So his army was being destroyed. He was losing the battle simply because no one wanted to fight against Srinivas. So he got so mad, he got so angry. Some say it was Tondaman, some say it was the son of Tondaman. That he took the chakra, the Sudarshan chakra that Srinivas gave him, and threw the chakra, threw Vishnu's chakra at Vishnu. And it hit him. And Vishnu fell to the ground. It was his Leela. And he appeared lifeless. And everyone stopped fighting then. And they all gathered around and they were all crying and praying, please come back, come back, come back, Srinivas, come back. And at that point, Tondaman and Vasudhan was thinking, what nonsense are we doing fighting? Look at what the result of the fight is, that Srinivas is injured. He may be killed. They were all crying and weeping, And the news came to Agastya Muni's ashram. And Padmavati ran to the scene with Agastya Rishi. And she was weeping and crying. And seeing that, everyone's hearts were melting. And then Srinivas came back into consciousness. And they both said, everyone said, whatever you say, Srinivas, we will do. So Srinivas said, we will divide the kingdom in two parts. And Vasudhan, you be the king here. And Tondaman, you be the king here. And forever you live in harmony with each other. And that took place. After some days, Srinivas approached Tondaman, who was a very, very great and dear devotee, and said, in the place that Lord Varahadev gave me, on the top of the mountain of Tirumala, build a glorious temple for me. That is where I will reside. Tondaman, with great efforts, built the original temple of Tirumala. Srinivas, Lord Narayan, resided in that temple with Lakshmi Devi and Padmavati. And at one time, very historical event, Srinivas said to Tondaman and the great rishis and sages that were gathered, that as of now I have been speaking freely with human beings, acting as one of you. But the age of Kali is progressing. I will no longer speak to just anyone. I will manifest my body as a deity. And whoever comes to worship me with sincere devotion, I will deliver them from their sins. And I will elevate them to Vaikuntha. Then Srinivas, stepping on the altar of the temple, manifested the Vigraha of Sri Venkateshwar. Sri Venkateshwar Bhagavan Ki Jai. Much louder, please. Sri Balaji Maharaj Ki. The greatest of the acharyas climb this mountain with their own feet, as we are going to do tomorrow, eager for the darshan of Sri Venkateshwar. Shankaracharya came here to worship. And later on, the great Vaishnavacharya Ramanujam. Ramanujam declared, according to the Shastras, that these seven hills are Vaikuntha on earth. Ramanujacharya was living in Sri Rangam. But singing the songs and the hymns of the Alwars always put him in a trance of ecstatic love. And one time while reading the glories of Tirumala and the Lord Sri Venkateshwar, he told his devotees, we will go there. He came to the foot of the hill and performed his bhajan, giving lectures on the absolute truth. one of his disciples, Anantacharya. He was living up there on the Lord's order, taking care of a garden. Knowing that his guru was down at the bottom of the mountain, he came down and asked him, "Please come up, please come up." But Ramanujacharya said, "How can I put my feet on that mountain? It is not different than Anantashesha. It is Anantashesha's body. It is Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. I cannot go." But he said, "Ramanuja, my Gurudev, if you do not go, then nobody will go. Even the pujaris, if you, the most holy and saintly and pure of all beings, are not willing to put your feet on the mountain, what is our position? The pujaris will come down. No pilgrims will go up there. Balaji will be up there all alone. You must come, please." So on the persuasion of the devotees, Sri Ramanujacharya climbed. As he was climbing, one of his spiritual masters, Sri Shaila Purna, came with garlands and prasad to greet Ramanujam when he was just close to the top of the mountain. Ramanujacharya said to his senior elder guru, he said, "Why did you come with all this load of prasad and garlands yourself? Why didn't you just send a junior devotee to do this? You are very old and it's very difficult for you." Sri Shaila Purna responded that, "Yes, it is the proper etiquette for me to send a junior devotee. But I looked in all directions and I could not find a single soul junior to myself. I am the junior most. I am the most neophyte of everyone, so I had to do the chore myself." This is what a guru of Ramanujacharya was speaking. Sri Ramanujacharya's heart melted with the humility of a true Vaishnava. He stayed on the top of the hill for 3 days, having the darshan of Sri Balaji in great ecstasy. It is explained that over a period of time, Balaji has four hands. Over a period of time, the Vaishnavas worship him as Vishnu, but the Shivites worship him as Lord Shiva. The followers of Shankaracharya consider that Balaji is Shiva. And the followers of Ramanujam and others considered him Vishnu. So should we put the drum of Shiva and the trident in his arms, in his hands? Or should we put the conch shell in the disc? There was a dispute. And you know how religious people can be when there's dispute over theological issues. It was a heated debate. Ramanujacharya proposed a solution. He said that, "O followers of Shankar, you put Shiva's drum and Shiva's trident before the deity. And I will put the conch shell and Sudarshan Chakra before the deity. And then we'll all leave the deity room and lock the door so no one has any possibility of coming in. And in the morning, we'll open the door and see which symbols the Lord is holding."
Can you imagine the intensity of that night? I didn't read this, but I don't think anyone slept that night. Because this was, in South India, this was like the ultimate deity. Is it Shiva or Vishnu? In the morning, the doors were open, and Sri Venkateshwar were holding the symbols offered by Sri Ramanujacharya of the conch shell and Sudarshan Chakra Venkateshwar Bhagavan Ki. Sri Ramanujacharya descended from the hill. Was about to depart for Srirangam, Sri Shailapurna, offered to teach Ramanujacharya Valmiki Muni's Ramayana for one full year in Tirupati. Ramanujacharya remained here in Tirupati for that year studying Sri Ramayana. Sripad Madhvacharya came here to Venkateshwar's mandir, resided for some time and worshipped Sri Balaji with great love and devotion with his disciples. Sripad Balabhacharya came here and worshipped Sri Balaji with his disciples. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, we find Nityananda Prabhu's pilgrimage. He came to Tirumala to worship Sri Venkateshwar with great love and devotion. And in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he walked up the same path that we'll be going tomorrow. And in the presence of Sri Venkateshwar, in ecstatic love, he offered his prayers. He danced with his arms raised, inducing everyone around to chant the holy name. So many of our beloved acharyas worship this place. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. If we are fortunate, we will see the lotus footprints of Lord Chaitanya that he installed here. And Srila Prabhupada himself came here. It is written about in his biographies to take the darshan of Sri Balaji. And he was very, very deeply impressed. In fact, he told devotees that we should learn how to manage a temple very nicely and worship the deity so beautifully from Venkateshwar Temple. Today, after lunch prasad, which will be served if I ever end this long lecture, we will be visiting the temple of Padmavati. Tomorrow, for those with the strength, providing there's no cyclone rains, by Yogamaya's potency, Christmas is such an immensely crowded place, time for Tirupati. More people come on pilgrimage here than any other temple in the entire world. Even though it's so difficult to get to,
And Christmas time is a time when people all around have holidays. So this place should be swarming with hundreds and thousands of people, millions of people. However, because there are cyclones in Andhra Pradesh, the vast majority of people are afraid to come. So the last few days I've been living on the top of Tirumala Mountain, and there's hardly anyone there. It's a great benediction. I mean, whoever's suffering from the cyclone, we definitely offer our prayers and our sympathies and pray for the Lord's compassion upon them. But at the same time, there is some good that we can. So tomorrow, those who are fit, we will leave at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the meeting place will be announced. And we will, following in the footsteps of Sri Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada drove up. So those who drive will be following in the footsteps of Prabhupada also. And tomorrow we will be having the darshan of Sri Venkateshwar Balaji. And the darshan is very fast. It's not like Radha Govinda temple where you can stand all day long and chant prayers. In Venkateshwar temple you only get a few seconds and you're chalo chalo, and you're pushed forward. But it's amazing. Sometimes people stand in line for 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, just standing in line for all these hours. They have to bring tiffins and just eating while standing in line. Sleep at night where they're in line. Just to get a 3-second darshan. Chalo, chalo. And in certain ways, and some people, they'd shave their heads. There is a certain hall where they shave heads. Hundreds and hundreds of people a day, men, women, everyone. As a traditional offering amongst the devotees of Balaji, an offering of surrender. Sometimes when things are too easy to achieve, we take it cheaply, or as they say, for granted. But things that are very hard to achieve, we meditate on its value more deeply. So this is one of the wonderful experiences about Venkateshwar. So much trouble to come here, and then to get up the hill, and then to stand in line, and then just a second or two, and then you're wished away. But for that second or two, just offering the deepest heartfelt prayers, praying for mercy, and beholding the form of the Lord with much intensity. That is what we should do. But factually, that is how we should behold the deity all the time. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, standing and gazing upon Lord Jagannath, there would be tears pouring from his eyes, his limbs trembling. And however much time he was standing before Jagannath, it was never enough. That is love. What should we pray? Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vajagatisha kamai. Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Rahayatiki. In the line of Lord Chaitanya and the six Goswamis, our prayer is for eternal service. Our prayer is for pure unalloyed love. We want nothing else. My Lord, if you want to embrace me or trample on me or make and broke me brokenhearted by not being present before me, as you like, I am your servant, unconditionally. Many business people have become wealthy by praying to Balaji, by offering gifts to Balaji. Many sick people have become healthy by offering their hearts to Balaji. But we do not want karma mishra bhakti. We do not want liberation, the desire of the jnana mishra bhaktas. We want shuddha bhakta. We want pure devotion. What is pure devotion? Samsadhira haritosha. My Lord, how may I please you? Let me just be your servant unconditionally. That is my ultimate ideal, my ultimate aspiration. And even in the footsteps of Vedavati, if I have to suffer for yugas, I will never give up the hope of the shelter of your lotus feet. In this spirit, let us worship the Lord and chant his holy names. I would like to add one thing before we end today's class. When I talk about ending class, I see that all of you are becoming very wide awake. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, he gives a wonderful purport to the story of Bhrigu Muni. That actually, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they were not negatively affected by Bhrigu Muni. They both pretended to get angry because they wanted Lord Krishna to be glorified as their supreme master for all of eternity. This is Vaishnava. Even at the cost of their own reputation, even at the cost of their own devotees, they want to give the world the highest benediction, the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki, Ananti Koti Vaishnav Brinda ki, Sri Venkateshwara ki, Sri Tirupati Kshetra ki, Go Premanandi.